Hello, everybody. Sav here. Here in Paris or near Paris in France, and welcome to this Infinity Cafe. I think it's number four, and it's the 10th of November for posterity 2018. So here we go. I'm speaking in the right language, I think, English, because I started my last webinar in French starting in English. And this is what I've got on the program for you today. Let me show you. So you should be able to see seven lines. The first one is a week on planet Earth, which is me telling you about anything interesting I've done during the week. Number two, a Paris metaphor. I'm writing a book on Paris metaphors, and this is where I share one of them with you. A way of looking at life through a little anecdote found in Paris. Number three, thought provokers. This week, well, this is where I give you, could be something I've read, something I've heard, talked to someone about. Then creative selection is where I show you some of my creations from the week. And because they're normally quite philosophical, there's something to talk about there. It's not just that's a pretty picture. And then there's quirks and curiosities, which is some other thing that's come to mind, maybe a little offbeat, we'll see. And finally, questions and answers, although what I do is I present a topic, one of these numbers here, and then we can talk about it. So, and number seven is to represent the spontaneity and the unpredictability of life because that exists. We can't really know what's going to happen. And that's to say that I'm perfectly open to that and we will see what happens. So, let me just show you my Facebook page, which has a kind of summary of what we're doing. So this week's takeaway, that's my week, is rejecting rejection. It's about rejection and what to do about it, or a feeling of rejection. Paris metaphors about metro doors or certain doors in metros. Book recommendation is a book about how to get much more, but you'll see it's not as grasping as that sounds. My creative selection, I'll be talking about pictures from this week's series, covering topics like purpose, locks, time, and toilets. Nice. Then a discussion, which may or may not take place. We didn't have time for it in the last video webinar, and it's called Should Artists Explain Their Work? So let's get started. Let's get cracking, as they say. And we'll start off with this week's takeaway, which is about rejecting rejection. And the story is, well, there were at least two things which gave me a feeling of possible rejection, and I had to deal with it. The first was in a group I belong to, a Facebook group, and not my group. And I like contributing. And when I contribute quite deeply, profoundly. So I write a load of stuff, for example. And I also try to add something new, not just my comment on whatever the post was, but I add something new which will take the conversation further. So I do this, and sometimes it can be quite in-depth, like long texts with possibly an image attached, and I put a lot of time and effort, I guess, into doing them. That's my style. I like words, I like thinking about stuff, and I did this a couple of times in a group or two this week. And on two of my most thought out profound pieces, I got a total of zero, count them, zero responses. Not even a like. I think one of them got a like and the other one didn't. So the potential for feeling rejected was quite high. I think you'll agree. So did I feel rejected? Of course, a little bit, but then I had to deal with it. And there's plenty of ways of dealing with it. Now, the general thing that happens is you feel either that people don't like you or that you're crap. Or possibly both, or that what you've done is crap. That's the first thing that comes to mind, I think. People hate me, or they think my stuff is crap. Unfortunately, that's not true. Well, fortunately, you could say fortunately, but if you make a big meal of it and get depressed and don't contribute or sulk or whatever, then it is unfortunate because that's normally not the case. If there's no reaction, to be honest, you've got no idea what they think of you. If they reacted with stuff saying that what you did was nonsense, or that you're an idiot, then you could start to have an idea of what they think of you. So most of this stuff we make up. We could make up other stuff as well, like, well, they didn't see it for some reason. It didn't come up in anybody's feed for some, you know, Facebook algorithm type reason. Or we could say they did read it and they did like it. They just didn't have time to respond at that moment. Or they liked it, they found it interesting, but they didn't feel they had anything to contribute. So there's a whole number of reasons that could be positive reasons they didn't react. So I try to tell myself that, and it's not always easy. And of course, I have those little pangs of, you know, rejection and why didn't they comment tonight? I worry that maybe I shouldn't have posted so much on somebody as a comment on someone else. You know, all this, the machine gets going and you're screwed when it gets going. You're overthinking it and you're inventing stuff to imagine why this non-event happened. And the second thing I had along those lines was another potential rejection feeling was, well, basically being rejected in a affective relationship, so a personal relationship. I had a feeling of rejection. I was actually literally, I perceived a message as a rejection, like terminating the friendship more or less, or suggesting that it would be better if we terminated the friendship. And exactly the same thing. Feelings, immediate feelings of sadness, of disappointment, and that feeling, which is more than that, you know, it's like the feeling of loss and hurt, which is nastier, I think, than disappointment. I'm not sure. But I tried to use my philosophy. My philosophy isn't to not feel feelings, because how can you not feel feelings? And you need negative feelings to have something to compare less negative feelings or really positive feelings with. So I'm okay with the idea of different types of feelings. I think we need them. But it would be nice to have some sort of strategy to deal with these feelings of rejection or disappointment, especially when we can realize that they're not really about us. They're more about the other people, or we're making stuff up, but it's not really true. So I tried to philosophize about this potentially dead or died friendship, and it helped. You know, I felt, well, okay, if it's the end of one thing, then it's going to be the beginning of something else, etc., etc. I tried to be positive in a later communication with the person that I had. I wasn't too negative. I tried not to be. I tried not to show my disappointment, because I'd invented the disappointment. It was mine. So I don't know if this person had the need to see that to an extent, because then they might feel that I was blaming them, and then a sort of fight could take place, and it definitely would be the end of the friendship. So I didn't do that. We talked again and it got better. So my takeaway lesson, one of them from this week, and I encourage you to look for these and even note them down, because they're everywhere, these little lessons of life, which you can note for yourself and you can pass them on, and they can be useful to others. People love stories of real things that have happened to others that can help them to see their case in a better light. So the message of that is, in terms of rejection, don't invent things that don't exist. Maybe you haven't been rejected. There may be perfectly good reasons why you didn't get the reaction you wanted or expected. Expectation is nonsense anyway, as is being offended, for example. These things are just invented things which don't really exist, and then we mess things up based on things we've invented. We invent the idea that we'd like it to be that way, and then when it isn't, we invent the idea that we've been attacked or hurt. Anyway, you see what I'm getting at. So that's the end of that one. That's the thing, that my takeaway from this week. What else can I share with you? Well, if that was the takeaway, rejecting rejection, the Paris metaphor is about metro doors. Well, not exactly. And I'll show you what I mean. Here's a picture. Now, can you see what's in this picture? There's a text. Let me get rid of that. So that's the picture. And it's a picture of an exit of to a metro station. So you go out, and some metro stations have this type of exit. It's a kind of machine. You see the green and the red bits there. It's a kind of a machine with two plastic glass doors, which open and close like that. And as you approach them, they will open, but they don't open until the last minute. So you just approach, your approach makes them open. But there's a little sensor and it's right next to them. If you carried on walking towards them at a normal pace, they will open and you won't hit them. They will open before you crash into them. But the thing is, it's just before. And the kind of life lesson that I'm getting for this, the metaphor, is that this is going to be, well, what do you have to do? You can either storm ahead with great confidence, not worrying for a second about the possibility which you're inventing that they might not open, you'll crash into them and you'll look like an idiot. And 9 times out of 10, or perhaps 999 times out of 1,000 or more, they will open, no worries. But there's that little worry in you that they won't, that something will go wrong if you go ahead in life, or rather in this exiting of the metro station, with too much confidence and not enough worrying about things that could go wrong. The thing you'd be worrying about that could go wrong here, which almost certainly won't, is that the doors won't open, you'll crash into them and hurt yourself or look like an idiot. So what could you do? Well, if you're like me and you're worried that they're not going to open up, I just can't bring myself to storm through them at normal pace. I always hesitate, and I get this kind of, whenever I feel I'm going too fast to stop in case they don't open, I get this kind of fluttering in my chest, you know, this sort of anticipation, adrenaline, preparing for the crash. And then the opposite approach is to just go up so gingerly, so tentatively, it's going to open, it's going to open, it's going to open. And then finally it opens, but you look like an idiot, you look like a wimp, as though, you know, they're going to jump out and bite you or something. So this is my metaphor for this week. It's these opening doors where they will open. They're made to open before you arrive at them. They're made to not be hit by someone who is walking at a normal pace. But it's so close. You know, you literally have to be like that. And they open. So you've almost hit them, basically. And it gives you this kind of adrenaline surge. If in life we stormed ahead, not worrying too much about these things that probably won't happen, well, we'd move on to other things faster, wouldn't we? We'd make more progress in life, actually. But many, many of us, I think, do lead their lives hesitating just in case the doors won't open and they'll get hurt or look an idiot. Just in case. They don't go push ahead in their lives as quickly as they could or as confidently as they could because something might go wrong. So I'm still developing these metaphors, so I think it's quite a good metaphor for trusting in life and just going ahead. You know, if in 1 time out of 10,000 these doors didn't function properly and you did get hurt, well, is that worth not walking forward in your journey and in your life at a normal pace, not hesitating, for those 9,999 times that you'll have no problems? Is it worth hesitating for that one time you might bash into the doors? And even if you do, you're not going to die. You might just look silly, or you might hurt your arm or something. So I say to you, storm ahead. In general, storm ahead, go confidently in the direction you want to go in. It'll probably be fine. And if something does go wrong, it's normally not that bad. In the doors, you might hurt your arm. Or you might look a bit silly, but who cares? And most of the times, there's no problem at all. That's my metaphor for today. I guess I should sum this up in a kind of one chunk, shouldn't I? Don't let the doors get you down, or don't let the doors slow you down, or something like that. That's something to think about. Now, the next section is number 3, and I should show you, I made some cards, look, to try and make it more fun. They're in French. So In the last video, I had to show them the thing on the screen was in English. Now I'm going to show you these little cards, and they're in French. But I'll probably do them in English for next time. So that says, une semaine sur terre, number one. That's my week, a week on Earth. The second one, which I've just done, was une métaphore parisienne. And the idea is, with these cards, to do something a bit more fun and visual than just me going blah, blah, blah. So I do try to show you things. You know, I show you my coffee cup. I'm going to show you this. And in fact, number three is indeed provocateur de pensée. In other words, thought, what is it in English? Stimulating thoughts or something. Let's see if I can find it. Thought provoking something or others. And I call it, so it's a book recommendation, but what do I call it? Thought provokers, simple as that, thought provokers. All right, so this week's thought provoker is coming right up. And it's this. Well, let me just tell you first, it's a book, okay? And it's based, I had to explain this in great detail to the French, but hopefully it'll be faster in English. You know the expression go-getter, someone who storms out there to get what they want, gets it, and then has it, and theoretically feels much better for it. You know that, the expression go-getter? Well, that's all based on the idea, isn't it? That you'll be better if you can get more stuff from out there, because the answer in many people's mind is out there. There's all that stuff out there. If I can get it, I'll be happier. Better house, nicer car, nicer woman or man, nicer job, nicer hairdo, not my problem, nicer computer, etc. Okay, so it's all based on that. Go out and get it. But to get stuff, you generally have to take it from other people or you know, pry it from their grasp, as it were. If people have got money that you want, or you have to find a way to get their money. And if you're going out there with a mentality of getting, well, that's what this book's all about. They say, being a go-getter is finished. If you want to make a lot, if you want to get really rich, now be careful, because when we think of rich, we think of money. But does money make you happy? Well, the Beatles said that it didn't. Money can't buy me love. But does it? You know, some rich people say, yeah, sure it does. I'd rather have money than not. But fundamentally, what is money about? You don't actually feel really happy, do you? Oh, if you're sitting there looking at your money, oh, you know, kissing your 500 euro notes or whatever. Money makes us happy because of what it brings us. But if it brings us stuff that we have to spend it on, then we haven't got the money anymore. So it's kind of the stuff that it brings us, or the stuff that it could bring us, the potential to bring us stuff. But this stuff is still external stuff for many people. Money is like a symbolic representation of other stuff. But the thing is, you can never have all the stuff, can you? There will always be someone with a bigger house than you. There will always be someone with a more beautiful or more modern or up-to-date or later model of car or telephone. If you have a partner, well, they will get old and they will be older as opposed to younger versions. Sounds cruel to say, but this is true. If you're looking for happiness out there in stuff that you've surrounded yourself with, there's a good chance you won't find the happiness you're looking for. You'll never be satisfied. Bring in this book, which is called The Go-Giver. Now, can you guess what it's about? It's a great book. I've just discovered it recently. And it's about giving. I pause there because I was going to say it's about giving in order to get. But that's not really the spirit of it. To be honest, the spirit of it is giving because you like giving. Full stop, period. You give because that's who you are. You're someone who gives. And the secret, they say, is if you do that, you won't be able to stop stuff coming back to you. And it's marvelous. And Well, I could say I'm putting it into practice in a little bit. I'm going to show you. I've got five laws of go-giving, and I'll tell you them. I haven't finished the book. I'm about this far through, you see. So I can't tell you them all with the experience of having read them, but I can tell you them. And they're great. It's a story. I mean, like I was going to say, I'm giving on these webinars. I'm giving my time. I'm giving my experience. I won't say expertise. I'm not an expert in anybody's life. Possibly my own, but I'm giving. It's not, doesn't cost you money to participate here. It's free and it's positive. And if you want it to be, it can be totally about you. Well, not totally, because I have to present something. Otherwise it would just be a chat, but you know, it's focused on you. I want you to get as much out of these as you can. It could be just listening to me, or it could be participating, but I'm giving before I'm receiving. And to be honest, this really is an experiment of this. In the book, there's a guy, it's like a parable. There's a guy who is a young businessman and he's desperate to make a big sale, or he'll have huge problems or lose his job or something like that. And he hears about this sort of mystical mentor. So he goes looking for him. And the guy, strangely, agrees to meet him with no problems whatsoever. And they meet and he says, yeah, sure, well, I'll tell you my secret. Well, he does actually. He says it's about giving. But he says, well, look, if you really want to learn it properly and believe it, come to me every day for 5 days and I'll teach you one of the laws of giving through some people that you'll meet each day. Then you'll get the five laws. But there's a condition for this relationship to continue for the 5 days, for these lessons to continue. And that is that, so he does it in his lunch hour, in parallel to his business problems, which I assume are going to be resolved by this new giving spirit by the end of the book. Yeah, I've read business parables before. And the condition is he has to put the law into practice before the next lesson, immediately, in other words, like in the next 24 hours. Otherwise, he is honor bound to cancel the lessons. So it's really good. And you've got lessons like this. There they are. They're called the five stratospheric laws of success. The first one is the law of value. And it says, your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. So in other words, in terms of worth, you think of worth and like how much money you've got and so on. How much worth have you? I've got, you know, $500 million or one. But they say, no, 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 that's not worth. That's not value. Your worth is how much more you give than you receive in payment. So the idea is to give as much as you can without thinking of what you're going to get. That's the key. I need to go through a couple more because I'm mixing up the examples they gave. But you'll see. The second one is the law of compensation. And then it's the law of influence. The law of compensation is your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. Right, so the law of value, the first one, is about giving without counting. You know, you're not, there's this idea of 50-50 that we have, or a win-win situation in business and I guess in life. And the idea is that, well, the old idea was that there was a winner and a loser in every negotiation. Yes, I won. I got the best deal and they got a crappy deal. Therefore, I won. Or I managed to sell them my services for the most possible money. Inflated, you know, more than it was worth. Therefore, I won and they're the idiots. Then came this nice modern idea. Modern, what, 30 years ago, of the win-win 50-50 situation, which isn't wrong, according to this book. It's okay, but it's seeing things the wrong way around. It's because you're counting, you see. 50-50 means I've got 50, no, you've got 50, I'm only at 45, therefore I'm not going to be 48, 50, okay, we're fine, we're quits, we're evens, good, we're both satisfied. But you're still counting, because as soon as the other guy goes up to 52, you're going to think, ah, I've gone down to 48. And it's this feeling of always keeping count, and always knowing who owes whom a favor. This book says, don't count, just give, just give, stop counting. And the less you count, the more will come back to you, because people won't see you even as any sort of competition. They'll just see someone who gives. And because business is based on humans, fundamentally it's humans interacting between themselves. If you're known as someone who gives unselfishly, who are they going to do business with, given the choice between, well, all other things being equal, for any service, between someone who is just a normal salesperson, for example, and someone who just gives so much value? That's their point. And you can't help but agree. Sorry, I can't help but agree. It's up to you if you agree or not. The law of influence is determined, your influence is determined by how. No, sorry. Okay, so compensation is how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So try to serve as many people as you can. I'm doing this webinar to try and reach loads of people with what I have to share. I won't give it any value. That's not for me, is it? But what I have to share, I want to reach as many people as I can. So I could have zero people watching this, or I could have 10,000, or I don't know how many this Zoom can cope with, but I mean, an unlimited number could watch it afterwards, couldn't they? So that's why I'm doing this, to give to as many people potentially as possible, not expecting anything in return. I'll be happy if and when I get returns. That's great, no problems. But it's not first and foremost in my mind. I'm doing this because I love it. I love talking about stuff like this. And I hope it'll help you. I hope it'll make you think. It may not be this, what I'm saying, that makes you think, but it might spark off another idea. This is often what happens in coaching. So the feeling you give is often more important than what you're actually saying. The last two laws. Well, the law of influence is your influence is determined by how abundantly you put other people's interests first. And the example in the book is actually the mentor guy, who says, I've been married to my wife for 50 years and we're just as happy, perhaps happier than the very first day. And the reason he thinks it is that he is more concerned with his wife's happiness than she is. And the apprentice guy, the young businessman, says, yeah, but aren't you kind of like putting yourself down? And the guy says, well, not really, because you know what? She is more concerned with my happiness than I am, than her own. That's the thing, sorry. He's more concerned with her happiness than his happiness. But in turn, without asking, she's more concerned about his happiness than she is about hers. So you've got two people very concerned about each other's happiness. And it's this more than win-win situation, isn't it? It's not 50-50, it's 100-100, if you like. The fourth law is the law of authenticity. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And that's what I was saying about people doing business, all other things remaining equal. Who would you choose? Someone you like, respect, trust, or an unknown person? Which is about knowing lots of people, but not necessarily people who can directly help you, but just it could be someone you've given to and they don't have something to give you back, but they might know someone who would like to work with you. So it's all about people as well. The law of authenticity is number four, the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. That's it. You're giving yourself, your service, your product, etc. In some cases, it seems pretty clear that the product is the product. But behind it, you'll still find some human element which has attracted you to buy it from there rather than from there. Because you're a human, and we can't deny that. So that's in there. And if we can not use it as a sneaky technique, but just be human, properly human, without a hidden agenda, being authentic, then they say so much. You open yourself to all the riches in the true sense, like satisfaction and feeling nice and able to help others that the universe has to offer. Law number five is the law of receptivity. And it says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. I haven't got that far yet, so I don't know what that's about. Highly recommend that, The Go-Giver. And then there's more in the series, because this is the first parable about this guy introducing the concept. But then they realized that it wasn't applied. It could be applied to specific areas such as leadership, sales, influencing. So there's further books in the series taking the idea and applying it more specifically. Good read, really good read. Highly praised as well, very highly praised book. Now then, where am I? I'm not sharing the screen. This is a mistake I made earlier. I forgot to share the screen. I thought I was. Talked about all the things I was seeing on the screen, and the people watching the video will just see my stupid head. So that's not good, is it? Right, let me share the screen. And now we're on a creative selection. There we are. Creative selection is where I show you some of the stuff I've created this week. Not just in a look what I've done, isn't it nice style, but in a look what I've done, listen to what that inspired in me, what it made me think, lessons of life and so on. And what about you? Have you got any to share with me or any comments on that? So this was, I'm still in my photos. This was my main creative output at the moment. It's my photographs. And even this should be inspirational. I started on the 1st of January creating a series of Paris street photos in this square artistic-y style you see here, and plus a version with a text inspired by the photo, by my life in Paris, by Paris itself, whatever comes to my mind. It's very honest, it's straightforward, I work on it. The text, you see there's a text here. The text is thought out. It's artistic writing, if you like. It's not just some old rubbish. I spend time on it. And I'm at 315, can you imagine? 315 of these things. Each one is a work in its own right, the photograph plus the text. I've done 315. In 50 days, it'll be the 31st of December, and I will have done 365 of them. That's amazing. And I'm going to do a webinar with one of the main themes, how to just move forward little by little and get somewhere big. If you get to know me, as you get to know me, you'll know that I'm not a fan of objectives anymore. I used to be. And funnily enough, I never really reached them. And it took me a hell of a long time to work out that it wasn't me that was wrong. It was the idea of objectives that was wrong. You can have objectives. I'm not against them. I help people set them. I've got my own. But the thing is to not be obsessed by them. The thing is to have the next step towards that objective as the foremost thing in your mind, to the extent that you've almost forgotten the bigger objective. My objective every day is to publish one of these square photos with text. And I have. I've done it for 315 days. So let me just show you what I've done this week. This guy, do you know him? He's called Thomas Paine. He's a thinker. But from, where was it? From 1737 to 1809 he lived. So he lived a reasonable life. Yeah, what, 70 years? And he called himself a citizen of the world. And he was one of these influential, maybe one of these first in the Western world thinkers who saw himself more as belonging to something bigger, you know, something, maybe not the universe, but he wasn't a fan of religions or things like that. He had his own philosophies and he shared them. He was even called a revolutionary at some point. On the plaque, somewhere I found, called him a revolutionary. And look what I found as quotes. I've got about three which I like. This one here. The world is my country. All mankind are my brethren. And to do good is my religion. I like that, to do good. It's a pretty good philosophy, isn't it? It's like, I want to be happy. That's my philosophy, I think. And I think actually it's everybody's dearest wish is simply to be happy. And we find some ridiculous ways in which we try to do that, don't we? That which we obtain too easily, we esteem too lightly. If it's too easy to get, well, we don't put any value on it. I remember my son getting, I was just discussing this today, when with Christmas coming up, a relative spending quite a silly amount of money for me, you know, like hundreds of euros, 300 euros or something like this, a lot of money for a little kid, on a special computer game, one of these, I don't know, Nintendo Switch or something, very fancy, great computer games. For a start, when he opened the package with her sitting there waiting for him to be just amazed by this amazingly expensive present, he opened the wrapper, said, okay, next, and was on to the next thing to open. He was having more fun opening the presents than actually appreciating them or even playing with them. And the proof is he's hardly ever used it, but he spends a ton of time playing with his little wooden pieces of wood, making train tracks. So he got that far too easily and it didn't have any value for him whatsoever. His train tracks, which he makes intricate copies of the Paris metro system, you go near those, you knock one of his little bits of wood with your foot, you are in trouble there. And this last one here, which I really like, we have it in our power to begin the world over again. Thomas Paine. Now remember, they write these, all these wise people, they wrote these things way before our era, and yet they're so relevant. And we can apply it to today. I'm fascinated by their lives. What were their lives like? And what did that mean to them when they said something like that? Because we have all our modern things and many, you know, thinkers that have come since these people. And yet they were coming out with wise stuff. If it works for you, that is. What does he mean by we have it in our power to begin the world over again? What does that mean? For me, the way I take it and use it is that it means we shouldn't get stuck in our past for a start, and that we can invent any future we like. I don't believe in the future. I don't think there is a future as a thing. I think we're just imagining, we're spending the present imagining future present moments. So we've only got the present. A lot of us spend time in the present, in our present moments, all we've got, thinking about the past, often regretting it, obviously, or wishing it had been different, and dreaming about the future. I don't worry so much about the past because it really is gone. The future, though, is made, if you like, if you want to imagine some sort of future, well, look at it that it's being made every moment. And therefore, if we want to have good futures, we've simply got to be leading, having a good time, doing what we're doing right now. This topic of the past, the future, and the present, and in fact, no time is a biggie. And I'm always talking about it. Let me go back to my photos. So what did I say with him? Yeah, there's a picture here. It's my son wandering along a train track. And the text I wrote was about time. Let's see if I can share it with you. I don't share this too much with the French folks because I have to translate it and then it turned into a mess, but I think it's easier if I share it here. The journey of life seems long until we realize that whatever we do to control it, the feeling of change we call time isn't waiting on us to start living. Clocks are indifferent, and distance is relative but irrelevant. Look back on this very moment after a few changes have taken place. Tomorrow, for example. It'll still be tomorrow. That is to say, you're new today. Whether you enjoyed yourself yesterday, in other words, now, or not. So fun so far. Time doesn't care what we do with our lives, but we theoretically do. If we accept at last that the past is long gone and the future never comes, That leaves one timeless moment to explore our infinite potential, and it's this one. So what I'm trying to say is, our future is made up of what we do in the present, because we don't have a choice. And in fact, the future never comes. Our past, if we wish to look back on it, will be made up of what we're doing right now pretty quickly. So we'd better be enjoying what we're doing right now. Even if it's imagining future moments, we need to remember that the future doesn't exist. Therefore, appreciate the present. That's something that I come back to again and again, and I'll probably find great difficulty. Now, hopefully over the years, I will be able to explain what I mean in simpler and simpler ways. But whilst I'm waiting for that, I do it like this, by attaching my ideas to photos which have inspired me. This one is fun, isn't it? It's me holding up a huge, heavy pyramid with one finger. How about that, eh? And I wrote a text which I fitted into the pyramid, so there was a bit of artistry there as well. And I started by saying, do we balance the universe on the tip of our finger? Or has God got us dangling from a celestial thread? God has a problem, you see. Or rather, those of us who have a fixed idea of God have. If God's all powerful, then either everything we do is predetermined by him, or he's surreptitiously controlling our decisions behind the scenes, which is pretty much the same thing. Where then free will? Have we got it or not? If not, why bother with silly stuff like goals? They won't change a thing. If yes, we do have free will, then God's not so omnipotent after all, and frankly, a bit of a fraud. Follow me so far? So maybe he gave us free will just to have a bit of fun watching us fucking everything up. Cool, the big G likes a laugh, which I wouldn't be against. But and here comes the crux of my thinking. I reckon we've got it all totally twisted. Our biggest mistake, as far as I'm concerned, is to imagine that we can even conceive of God for a second. In other words, conceive of what life is, what's greater than us, why we're here, how the universe exists, and so on. How on earth could we imagine something that has created us? It's impossible. We can't imagine it. It must be impossible to imagine. So our biggest mistake is to imagine we can even conceive of God, not to mention assigning him some suspiciously human traits and calling him, for example. Amen? Amen. So I had fun writing that one, you can imagine. So my idea is to have fun writing, of course. That's having fun in the present. But it's always, always to hopefully stimulate some thoughts in other people as to, you know, what's going on or what isn't going on, with a view to helping people lead richer, more enjoyable lives. As always, always my aim. This one is good, look. Paris street art, amazing. With the image, of course, played around a bit by me. And that's something I'll talk to you about some other time, what I'm doing there. I will tell you. I've got this new group that I created a week or so ago, and it's for people who are on a spiritual path, but they still have a sense of humor, because so many people, they seem to lose it when they start investigating the deeper things. And this just doesn't work for me. I've got to see people smiling at the ridiculousness of the stuff we make up. Having fun. Life has to be about having fun. So many serious, po-faced spiritual gurus, and there are some that aren't. There are some that are having fun. Those are the ones that I learn from. But there are so many. And you know what? It's the wannabe ones. It's the wannabe spiritual gurus. They're so stressed out about being taken seriously, they forget to have a good time. And those are the ones that I've created a group for. They're welcome to join the group, but they, and if they don't, they may be made fun of, but I'm making fun of myself as well. It has to be that. I made a comment in one group once, and someone said, I think a foreign person who didn't get, you know, my English, that, I'm sorry, I don't understand your comment. Are you being sarcastic or have I missed a point? I would never be sarcastic. I hate sarcasm. It's not funny. It's not clever. Humor has to be clever or just funny. You know, it sounds stupid. Humor should be funny. Sarcasm is not funny. It doesn't make me laugh unless it's, you know, it's nasty. The nastiness far outweighs the funny side, if there is a funny side. Humor can be very clever and very witty without being nasty. And always this idea that you're fundamentally laughing with the people, not at them. And if they're unable to laugh at themselves, that's not my sort of person. I'm definitely one who appreciates people who can laugh at themselves. So I've got this group, which I've called, what have I called it? Where is it? I've called it the Wannabe Self-Help Guru Recovery Forum, your safe space. So what I'm doing here is something which will probably piss people off. And this is kind of the story of my life. But if you don't do something different, if you don't drag yourself, scrape yourself out of the mold and dare to be a bit different, you're never going to reach the people who are looking for someone different to inspire them to, as a model for themselves to get out of the rut that they're in. The rut is the rut of conformity, normally. You're supposed to do it this way. And I am on a veritable crusade against labels. This is, I'm moving towards a purpose here, although you'll see what I think of purpose later. And I've done a 180 on life purpose. But in terms of things which I am getting excited about doing more and more of, it's attacking labels of all sorts. I won't go into that anymore now, but that's the thing. By the way, if you want to see my photographs, which I produce daily, you can find them here on Instagram Paris Set Me Free, instagram.com/Paris Set Me Free. Every day they're there. You see my latest ones? There we are. Two versions, just the photo, because I'm fundamentally a photographer, street photographer, plus a version with the text. The photo comes first. So I don't compromise my photographs so that the text will fit in nicely around it. And I've standardized on the square format, possibly forever. Because that's going to be me. That's me. I'm the square format Paris street photographer guy who does text to go with it. And I'm also the infinity squared square 3x3 square abstract painter guy. You know, I found a thing that I like. That's all. So you see there, the text, the photo with the text. The photo with the text. Okay, so that's me. And also I do memes, which is where I take my photos. It's recycling. I'm very, very ecologically friendly. I recycle my pixels, you see, and I do publish the same photographs with a meme that I've created. You know, my story is that I was getting so sick of getting other people's memes every day. I mean, they just posted them on. They didn't even add a comment. It wasn't their original words. It wasn't their original photo. Please, I want creative people in my life. But I like memes. So I thought, I'm going to set the example. I'm going to create my own memes, my own words, with my own photos based on what I've learned in my life. And I'll pass them on. So I'm passing on memes, but at least they're mine. And I encourage others to do exactly the same thing. Not pass my memes on, pass their own on. So there's that too. So back to my photos. How are we doing? We're at... We've got about 15 minutes left. I'll try to cover as much as I can. If I had people who were willing to contribute and wanted to discuss things, then we would. But right now, I don't have any contributors. So I'll push on. And to be honest, I'll go, look at this one. This reminded me of my days a few years ago when I was in a less stable state than I am now. And I spent a lot of time roaming the streets of Paris late at night. And these cabins, these toilet cabins, would close around about 10 o'clock, if not before, if they weren't out of order. And you'd be stuck desperately needing a pee. And now they're open 24/7. It's pee party time, folks, in Paris. And so it's kind of a nostalgic photograph for me. And then there's this guy as well, this guy with the bags. And I often focus on homeless people as part of my street photography, which is about what I see. It's not about idealized images. It's about what I see in front of me. And although I play with the images themselves are, I want them to be as different as possible. Every single one as different as possible. And it's what I see. It's what touches me as I walk around. Paris speaks to me. I never go to Paris with an agenda, very rarely. I just walk. I choose an area maybe that I haven't been to before, or a normal area. I walk and I let Paris speak to me. And it always does. It gives me the images. They start coming to me. I capture them, I play with them. And then as this artistic, this creative process, the day when the day comes that I want to use this picture as part of this series, I do the same thing, but Paris spoke to me to give me the picture. Now the picture speaks to me to give me the text. It's amazing. It always works. So a homeless guy. I've never been homeless in Paris, but I have been in not good states. Very, very often. So I'm very close to images like this, to be honest. And I'll finish with this one. Look, it's a flower. At least I think it's a flower. I've got this kind of nagging feeling that it used to have petals and that was the middle, but I don't think so. I think that's the flower. And it looks like a pink heart. How amazing is that? It gives me, I sent it to someone I love, I care for, and it gave me great pleasure to be able to do that. I mentioned purpose a moment ago, and I've spent a lot of, I'm moving on to part five now, quirks and curiosities, and I want to talk about purpose for the rest of this webinar. And I've spent quite a lot of money on some courses where the main thing they do is help you to find your purpose in life. The idea being that when you find your purpose, your direction, the idea is that there's something out there, a purpose, which when you find it and go for it, you'll be, I don't know, happy or fulfilled for the rest of your life. It's like it's a thing sitting on a shelf, like this, you know, this cup or this magazine. It's a thing, it's sitting there waiting for you to find it. It reminds me of, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll read this text to you rather than, and then you'll see where I'm at with my thinking, okay? Are you reading these words on purpose? Or did you just stumble across them? I've been thinking a lot about purpose recently. Internet marketers posing as self-help gurus incite us to find our true purpose in life. They can offer help, obviously, including a flexible payment plan. But is purpose actually a thing? It's a bit like imagining that somewhere out there is your ideal life partner and soulmate who'll finally complete poor little imperfect you if only you can track them down and tame them. What's the purpose of this little heart-shaped flower? To attract pollinating insects? To make the person I give it to crack a smile? To serve as the pretty background to this text? Maybe, just maybe, its purpose is whatever I want it to be, or nothing at all. And our true purpose in life, maybe, is to see what's in front of us right now and appreciate it, possibly on purpose. So that's where my thinking is. And I made a meme as well, just made it today. What's the purpose of this flower? To make me smile? To attract insects? to inspire this text? I won't answer that question on purpose. So on purpose, I don't answer because I want the people who read this meme to ask themselves that question. And it seems to me that this flower doesn't have a purpose until something else gives it one. Maybe the bee who is looking for this flower gives it the purpose of serving nectar up to it. Or the plant that it belongs to gives it the purpose of having the seeds which are going to make new pink heart flower plants. Or maybe it's me who gives it the purpose of making someone I give it to happy, or making someone I give a photo of it to happy. Or maybe its purpose for me is to give this image, this text, a lovely background. And if we apply that to ourselves, what is our purpose? You know, we go looking for purpose, our purpose in life. We pay lots of money to discover our purpose, to find it, like it's out there, outside of us, I mean, not inside of us already. Or, as I suggested in the text, doesn't even exist. I would like to think, I like thinking that in fact, there isn't any purpose. There isn't a purpose out there waiting for us. You know, we get hung up on things that we've invented and desperately look for reasons to justify them. But the problem is they don't actually exist. And I think purpose might be like that. It might be that we don't have a purpose, or that we have, imagine, instead of thinking we have a purpose out there, we just have to find it. What's the flip side of that? The flip side of that is that for a start, we never find it. We probably never do find the perfect person or the perfect purpose in life. And in not finding it, we feel shit. We feel unhappy. We feel unfulfilled because we've invented the idea that there's a purpose out there or a person out there. If only we could find them, that would make us happy. We've assigned our unhappiness to external factors. Idiots. I haven't gone into this much, but I have my own ideas on what out there is. And out there may be actually inside our heads. So given that, imagine that is the case. It's all in here. So the idea of looking for something out there, even if it's something that we've imagined like purpose or some other person, is pointless. What if on getting rid of the idea of the existence of purpose, we open ourselves to an infinite number of possibilities? Because we have no purpose, we can serve any number of purposes. It's like this toilet bowl, which just happened to be there for me to blow my nose on. There you are. You might think that toilet roll's purpose is to wipe your backside on. Well, if it's sitting in a toilet in the bathroom next to the toilet, that's probably its intended purpose by someone else, not its purpose. You see, it's not sitting there thinking, I've got a purpose. I need to find backsides. I need to find backsides or my purpose will not be fulfilled. It's sitting there as a toilet roll. It may be that one of its purposes for someone is to wipe their backside. It may be for me right now is to blow my nose if my nose is running. It may be if my son found this, he would say, great, I found it. What, toilet roll? You want to blow your nose, wipe your backside? No, I need a tunnel for my train system that I've invented on the floor out of pieces of wood. That's the perfect tunnel. And he would make a tunnel out of the inside roll of the toilet. Well, maybe if I drop my coffee on the floor, this will suddenly take on a purpose of being very handy for mopping up the mess. Maybe if you're, I don't know, you're at a parade or something and there's someone you want to celebrate or even criticize or ridicule, you might throw toilet rolls at them in the street and they make a wonderful streaming effect. So this doesn't have one purpose. It has an infinite number of purposes. So the idea of assigning things a purpose, even if they seem to have a clear purpose, or in our case, we think we should have, don't. Just stop it, as Bob Newhart said in that famous sketch. Just stop it. Don't think you have a purpose in life, and you can serve an infinite number of purposes. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a great way to look at things? Of course, this messes up all the, you know, investment you made in those purpose-finding classes. And I'll be honest with you, there's a ton of people that I know in this sort of exploratory world, helping people to lead better lives as their purpose. And they say that to people. They say, let's find your purpose. When you find your purpose, everything will be okay and I'll have justified my fee. And I think it's possibly bull. We've been on for about an hour and I'm going to stop in a second. Let me just see if I've covered everything. I've enjoyed myself. I hope anyone watching has too. Right, let me come back to quirks and curiosities. Well, that was the purpose thing, all right? Which followed nicely from one of my photographs, as things often do. Question and answers is for you guys, so that's up to you. If you're watching this on the replay, you can always leave comments if you see this, a link to this in the Facebook group. I don't think you can leave comments on my website yet, unless I start putting them in my blogs, but I'm not doing that at the moment. I'm doing that on this page. Look, I'll show you this page on my site. Well, let me tell you the blogs. There's the Infinity Coaching blog, okay, where I put stuff. So I do encourage you to join that or to get other people. You see, when I've done creations which are relevant to coaching, I put them in here and you can discuss them there. I may put this recording in this group as well. I'm still working out my strategy on that. If you go to infinitycoaching.biz, you'll find a link to the webinars, and you find the webinars are here, you see. Coffee and Croissant 3, that's the English one, and on the same day, Café and Croissant 3 is the French version. Okay, so it's all there. You can watch them all for the moment, and I hope you get lots out of them. But as I said, you can't comment here yet unless I start putting them on the blog. And the last thing I wanted to tell you about is this group. It's a new group. It's a half profound, half irreverent group. It's called Wannabe Self-Help Guru Recovery Forum. And I'm not sure who it's for. I'm not sure of its main purpose. But I see two potential purposes to start with. One is for self-help people, folks who have done some work on themselves and they fancy themselves as a kind of self-help guru. They think they could help others, but they get a little bit above themselves. You know, it's like these people who don't have a sense of humor and they're being so serious. Sometimes I'm listening to these people and they do videos and it's like they're just reading a page from a book on self-esteem. It's so boring. You know, I've read it. I don't want to hear you read a page from a book on self-esteem. I want you to talk to me as a human being. Make me laugh, make a mistake, hesitate, drink some coffee. I don't care. I want to see a human being. I go to see people talk about things I know already regularly. Why? Because I want to see how they do it. I want to see how they do anything. I don't care about what they're talking about, to be honest. I want to see someone else giving of themselves because that's what I love. That's why I'm doing it. I'm giving. And I love people who give too. But please give of yourself. Don't just give something which has no personality of you in there. That doesn't interest me. That's just me, guys. That's just me. Some people would like to have someone clearly and seriously explain how to lead a good life and feel good about yourself. It ain't me. And that's what this group is about. people who take things, life, seriously, with a big sense of humor. They never take themselves too seriously. They love the profound stuff, but they ain't taking themselves too seriously. So those people, this group is for them. And I think I've got an inkling that another purpose for this group could be for the folks that the wannabe self-help gurus are trying to touch. In other words, people who really, they haven't investigated this much and they need some help or they want to go further. And I think this could be for them as well, because there are no pretensions whatsoever in this group. We're all learning. It's as simple as that. And we're all having fun. So I'm going to stop it there. Thanks a lot for being with me or for watching the replay. And please tell people about my stuff if you like it. And I'll be doing another one, I reckon, next week. So come along, bring your friends, bring questions. I'll have some topics to discuss. And we'll have a good time. As usual, I'm only here because it's fun. It's fun for me and I want it to be fun for you too. All right? So take care and see you soon somewhere. Bye.